number 10-5253 et al. Air Transport Association of America, Inc., appellant Ashton Therrell et al. Versus National Mediation Board et al. Mr. Siegel for appellant, Mr. Koppel for appellees.
May it please the court. Good morning. Robert Siegel for the ATA. Your honors, from the very first day Section 2/4 of the Railway Labor Act was enacted in 1934, the NMB interpreted to mean what it expressly says, that the board may not certify a union unless the majority of the crafter class has first determined that a union should be certified. The board adhered to this interpretation for over 75 years and through 12 presidential administrations, six Democratic and six Republican. And the board expressly and repeatedly recognized in 1935, in 1948, in 1950, in 1987, and in 2008, that this interpretation of Section 2/4 requiring majority-supported unions was essential to the core purpose of the Railway Labor Act, the promotion of stability in railway and airline labor relations.
So you agree, don't you, that agencies can change their position?
Your Honor, it's been recognized by the court in the Fox decision that agencies can change decisions, but they must change decisions within the limits of the applicable law. And the law that it's applicable here.
They can't change their position if the statute's clear, correct?
That is correct. And if the
statute's ambiguous, then they can change their interpretation.
They can change the interpretation.
As long as it's reasonable.
As long as it's reasonable and not arbitrary and capricious, Your Honor.
Let's start with clarity, okay? I would agree with you that if the statute's clear, it clearly requires your review of the statute, then the board can't change it. That's end of the case, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
So, but it says the majority of any craft. And what the district court said was that the statute's ambiguous on how the majority exercises its determination. That the board once used to say that the majority exercises its determination one way, and now it's said it exercises its determination another way, and the way it has now, it's now arrived at what the Supreme Court said in Virginia Railway. So how can the statute be clear and unambiguous if it doesn't, as the district court said, define or dictate how the majority, quote, determines?
Your Honor, there is a clarity,
yeah,
first of all, in both the phrase in Section 2/4 and in the entire structure of the Railway Labor Act. But the clarity, which I don't think the government in its brief to this court contests at this point, yeah, is that the phrase in Section 2/4 of the Railway Labor Act creates a right to determine.
Right, but the question I was asking you and the one the district court focused on was, you're totally right. No one disagrees that the majority has the right to determine. The ambiguity flows from the absence in the statute of any clarity as to how the majority makes that determination.
Right.
And that's my question.
And Judge Tatel, I think that's the important point.
Right.
The focus here is that the courts, the decisions, and the ATA do not contend that the board lacks discretion to determine how to conduct its investigation, whether or not the majority.
That wasn't my point. That wasn't my question. I agree with you about that too. I was just asking you about. I'll just do once more. The district court says that the ambiguity lies in the statute's failure, or Congress's failure, to say exactly how the majority determines.
Well, Your Honor, actually,
what's
think...
What's wrong with that?
First of all, Your Honor, I think the district Judge Friedman, with all respect, found that the phrase majority of craft or class was ambiguous, and I think that was error. That the phrase majority of craft or class has been recognized, even in the Virginia Railway case, to mean a majority of the eligible voters. There's no ambiguity in that phrase.
The Virginia Railway case didn't decide that question.
The Virginia Railway case decided one issue, which was that the phrase majority of craft or class does refer to the majority of the eligible voters. But then the case, as Your Honor just indicated, did not decide the issue that's present before this court. The only court that's ever decided the issue before this court was actually the district judge in Virginia Railway.
In fact, in Virginia Railway, didn't the court say the precise point that Judge Tatel is making in his questioning? Mm-hmm. It said that the statute is silent as to the manner in which the right shall be exercised. Now, we're bound by that.
Your Honor.
The Supreme Court's telling us it's silent as to the manner. And so
it notes, the Supreme Court first notes that the words of Section 2-4th, and I'll quote, confers the right of determination upon a majority of those eligible to vote.
So I think we're all on the same page with right. That. The question is, how do they exercise that right?
Right.
And the Supreme Court says the statute is silent. As
it's silent.
And that's the problem.
And Your Honor, if I might, the silence goes to the issue of how you determine whether the majority has exercised it right. But the silence does not allow the National Mediation Board or the courts to ignore the dictate of Congress that there has to be protection of the right of the majority to make that determination.
But you see, the board doesn't disagree with that. The board is saying that the majority does exercise its right, and it's interpreting the failure of some members of the union to vote as a judgment, as an acquiescence of the vote. In other words, this they agree with you that a majority is required. They're just interpreting the non-votes differently now.
Well,
that's all.
Yes, Your Honor, but the statute doesn't permit that. The statute requires that there be a determination by the majority.
And if I might, in
Virginia Railway, which was a case where the majority of the crafter class participated in the election and determined that a representative should be certified, the question that was addressed was simply, what do you do once a majority of the craft or class has acted in that manner and has made that determination, and the court was faced with the proposition that a minority would somehow be able to undermine the majority's determination. And so the question before Virginia Railroad was, how do we prevent that? And it allows the fact that once the majority has determined that there should be a representative, then the minority shall not be permitted to undermine the determination of the majority.
Since you're relying on Virginia Railway, the court says, quote, those who do not participate are presumed to assent to the express will of the majority. And that's what the board has said here.
No,
that's how the board has interpreted it here.
But
exactly the way the Supreme Court did.
I need to take a step back, Your Honor. The issue before us was only before the district judge in Virginia Railway.
I understand that. I completely understand that the board, Supreme Court, did not decide the issue that you're raising here. But it did say that that it's natural to presume that non-voters acquiesce in the view of the majority. That's all.
I know, Your Honor, I read, if I might, read correctly. That presumption was to protect the right of the majority. Because if you do not make that holding, the question there was, once the majority has determined through participation in an election that a representative should be certified, it is inappropriate to, as said the court, to presume that we will not...
Is your rule any better at protecting the majority? Let me give you a hypothetical. So as I understand your argument, if we had a vote in which there were 35% of the eligible voters voted for the union and 10% voted against, there's no certification, right? Under your rule, because you don't reach the 51%.
That was the rule the NMB had for 8 years.
Okay. So, but now let's change that a little bit. 35% vote for the union, 20% vote against the union. What happens in your case there?
Under the rule that the board administered in the for 80 years, Your Honor, under your hypothetical.
Does that make any sense? Is your rule protecting the majority?
Well, my rule is consistent with the language and the purpose of...
You were the one that was going to the purpose of protecting the majority, and your rule doesn't protect it.
Well, I think, with all respect, Your Honor, there was no certification for 80 years. For 80 years, there's been no certification that would, except in extraordinary circumstances of egregious interference with the attempt of the majority to exercise its rights. There has been no certification that would be permitted. Starting from the first day that the statute was enacted, starting from the 1935 decision of Judge Way.
We know it's 80 years. But that doesn't help you if the statute's ambiguous, because the board can change that if its interpretation is reasonable.
Your Honor,
it'd be 200 years in the board.
I don't rely simply on 80 years. I'd like to also
Let me try to get at Judge Griffith's point with maybe a slightly different hypothetical, because I don't understand the practical consequences of what you're saying here. Suppose you have 100 employees in the unit, and you have an election where 49 vote yes, 2 vote no, and nobody else votes. Now, under your theory, that's proper, correct? You have a majority, 51 voting, 49 voted for the union.
Under the new rule, that would allow for a minority selected union.
Wait, you would not, under your view, you would not permit that? You have 51% voting. You have 51 of them voting.
Your Honor, under the old rule, there wouldn't be a no vote. I'm assuming
under my hypothetical, you would have 51. Well, you would have a majority voting. Would you permit that election or not?
Your Honor, if you're saying the rule that the board did implement for 80 years said that if a majority of the crafter class participated, so yes.
Okay, so let me change the hypothetical a little bit. So that's okay with you. 49 yes, 2 no, 49 no's. We've got a proper election.
Your Honor, the rule I'm defending doesn't have a no. It didn't have a no vote in it.
I understand that. But it interpreted the 49 non-votes as no votes, right?
If the hypothetical is that 51 out of 100 participated in the election.
Right, so let's change the hypothetical just a little bit. Same 49 vote yes, but the 2 who voted no, they're still opposed to the union, but they just didn't vote. Now what?
Yes, I think the statute, Your Honor, I think the statute requires an act of determination by the majority.
I'm not asking you about the interpretation of the statute. I'm asking you about this hypothetical. Under the second one, where you have 49 voting yes, and the 2 who previously voted no decided not to vote, right? Under the old rule, that would not be a permitted vote, correct?
Correct.
So what difference does it make? In both cases, you only have 49 people voting for the union. The result is identical.
No,
I don't understand what this is all about.
Well, Your Honor, the
49, in both cases, you have 49 saying, I support the union, and 51, no.
The difference is the majority has participated.
That's.
And I want to ask you about the nature of the entity that holds the right. For instance, I have a right to vote. That's an individual right. I have to be 18. I have to register. I can also waive that right or exercise it by not voting. Here, you have an entity with a collective right, and the entity is a majority, half plus one. That right cannot be exercised by any less than that.
That's
and I don't see what is unclear about that. And Virginian Railway necessarily said, as long as you have a majority participating, we are not going to require you to have a majority also vote for the union. And in that case, the one craft that didn't have a majority participating, the carmen and coach cleaners or whatever, the district judge invalidated that election, and nobody appealed it.
Judge Henderson, you've got it exactly right, and I think that is the correct interpretation of 2/4.
And to follow through with it, in order for this collective right, which is owned by the majority, to be waived or relinquished or exercised, you've got to have half plus one doing anything.
Sorry. And I think that's a limit imposed upon the National Mediation Board's ability to certify under the language of 2/4. And I also, if I just might say, I think it's wholly consistent. It's wholly consistent with the core purpose of the Railway Labor Act. We need not just read the language of 2/4 in isolation. The board didn't read it in isolation for all these years. The board read section 2/4 as being part of a statute that was designed to indeed certify only majority.
Tell me what you think the Supreme Court then meant. What do we, if I agreed with you about the plain meaning of the statute, I'm not saying I do, but if I agreed with you about the plain meaning of the statute, what am I supposed to do with the Supreme Court's language that the statute is silent as to the manner in which the right shall be exercised? Are you saying they're just wrong on that?
No, absolutely not, Your Honor.
What does that language mean?
Here's what it means. It deals with a situation, and if I could just take a moment. Remember, there were two different bargaining units. As Judge Henderson just indicated, we know this, but in the first instance, when you had an election in a bargaining unit where a majority did not participate, The district judge ruled that the NMB certification was illegal because of that, and the union and the NMB did not appeal. It did not go up to the Fourth Circuit. It did not go to the Supreme Court. The only issue that was dealt with was a situation where there's a bargaining unit, and you have a majority of the crafter class, a majority of the bargaining unit, has indeed sent in ballots indicating and determining that there should be a representative. But the votes have been split between two unions. And the issue that went up to the Supreme Court, which had not yet been resolved in those first few years after 2/4 was enacted, was what do you do once you have the prerequisite under 2/4, which is a participation and a determination by the majority?
Silent as to how to decide between the two.
Between the two. And all the board
does
was...
2/9 deal with that?
Well, Your Honor, I think 2/9 says that the board is, must protect the rights.
But it says in any appropriate manner.
I think that means, to give you an example, Your Honor, that means they don't have to conduct an election. That means they can have a ballot with the yes or no. It means a lot of things about how you determine whether the majority.
What about our cases, which have picked up on this silent as to the manner in which the right shall be exercised, and have come up with a different reading of them than you're giving us now? What do we do with those?
Well, I don't think none of the cases, Your Honor, have dealt with the issue before the court today, which is whether or not the language in 2/4, fairly read, imposes the limit on the National Mediation Board that the board itself believed existed for over 75 years. Those cases have to do with the proposition that once the board is going to adhere to the mandate in Section 2-4 and protect the right of the majority, the board can decide how to determine whether the majority is or is not selecting a representative. And they can do that by the form of the ballot. They can do that by conducting an election or not. They can do it by requiring that the incumbent union be on the ballot or not. They can do it by putting a yes or no box on the ballot. But what they cannot do, and what they've never done for well over 75 years, is simply ignore the mandate, the requirement in 2-4 that the majority has a right to make this determination. And Virginia Railway certainly didn't address or undermine that. It was actually trying to preserve the right by virtue of, if it came out a different way, the minority would have undermined the determination of the majority, because it would have said, since we can't get a majority for one of the two unions, we're not going to certify. So what the Supreme Court was dealing with in that situation was an attempt to adhere to Section 2-4 by being certain that the majority's voice would not be eliminated through the voice of the minority. The board's argument in this case flips that presumption, flips that ruling completely on its head. And it says that we should be able to make an assumption that allows the minority to take over the determination of the majority. That's exactly opposite of what the Supreme Court was holding.
Mr. Siegel, suppose, just for purposes of discussion here, that I wasn't convinced that this statute's clear, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That it's ambiguous. What's your best argument that the board's interpretation is unreasonable? I've now gone to Chevron 2,
yes,
right? Not arbitrary and capricious. We'll deal with that later. I'm asking for your best argument that it's unreasonable.
And before you answer that, it first has to be permissible.
Yes, Your Honor. And let me say that I think that there's a couple of let me try to go to the best, Judge Tatum. The new rule basically focuses on the wrong question. They have said that we're going to pass a new rule after all this time. We're going to ignore what we've said before on 6 or 8 occasions about the stability requirements of this statute. In fact, we're going to say that our rule in determining representatives does not have to even assess or be connected to the core value of the Railway Labor Act, which is stability.
I understand that, but didn't the board explain in its decision that the way it looks at it now, it views the stability coming from the collective bargaining process and the mediation process, not so much from the details of the election? Yep. That's what the board now says.
It's a remarkable statement. John.
It's a statement. Remember now, my question is at Chevron 2. And at this point, this court owes deference to the board. They're the ones who were appointed by the president, confirmed by the Senate, to make these kinds of decisions, not us, right? So the board has looked back and it's said, look, we've looked at this, and we really think, as we look at the history of this, that the stability comes from something else, and that this is a better way to reflect what the electorate actually wants. Now, that's their view, and I know you disagree with it, but what basis do I have for disagreeing with it?
Well,
what basis do I have for saying it's unreasonable?
Well, if I might, Your Honor, yeah. If I can answer the question by first turning it back on the board itself, okay. Because this is not something that the ATA or I have just created for this argument. The issue of stability created by certifying only majority unions was a concept created and adhered to and repeated over and over again by the MMB.
You agreed with me at the outset of the oral argument that the board can change its mind.
Your Honor, it cannot change its mind if it is inconsistent with the rule of law, and it also can't change its mind if it doesn't.
No, we've gone beyond Chevron 1. We're not at Chevron 1 anymore. My question is all based on the assumption that it's ambiguous. So the statute, the question is, what's unreasonable? What basis does a court have? A court, that's us, for finding that it's, I may disagree, I may think you're totally right as a matter of policy, but Congress hasn't given us that choice. Congress has given that to the board as long as it does it reasonably.
Well, no ambiguity with the word majority. It means
but my hypothetical is based on the fact that...
Look, Judge Taylor, I understand the question. Look, the issue...
And I understand your argument that it's clear. You may be right, but I'm just asking you the second.
There's an accuracy. I think they fail in Chevron 2 because, first of all, they've completely failed to explain how this new rule would be a more accurate measure of whether a majority of the crafter class has exercised its right to determine the outcome.
They say there's record evidence that there are many reasons why people choose not to vote.
Not
just because they're opposed to the union, but maybe they're sick, or maybe they don't care enough, or maybe they're prepared to acquiesce to the majority.
Speculation about why somebody doesn't vote is the wrong question, Your Honor. It's the wrong question asked by the board and in their final rule, and it's the wrong question asked by the board in their brief.
The question
is whether or not a majority of the crafter class has exercised its right to determine to be represented. And it doesn't matter why somebody has not exercised its right to determine or why someone didn't vote. There could be speculation on that forever. What is mandated by Congress, and also I want to just get it out that
you've gone back to Chevron 1.
Well,
by the way, speaking of that, so your argument basically is this is a quorum requirement, right?
I'm sorry?
This is a quorum requirement.
Yes.
This quorum requirement.
This is not a quorum requirement. No, the NMB doesn't have the authority to adopt a quorum
reading the statute
requirement.
Is imposing a quorum requirement. You have to have more than 50% participate. That's a quorum, right?
I'm not reading it as a quorum. I'm reading it as Congress drafted the statute, Judge Tatel.
But as a quorum requirement, correct?
It's a requirement that the determination is owned and must be made by a majority of the crafter class.
A majority is the quorum, correct?
I have never seen it referred to as a quorum. It's a majority.
Isn't that what you're saying it is? I mean, my point is that Congress knows how to require 50% participation when it wants to.
Well,
it does it all the time.
So
why would it use language like this if what it meant was that it has to be a majority of those not a majority of those voting, but a majority of those eligible to vote?
Your Honor, I think the Supreme Court of New Railroad said that a majority of the crafter class means a majority of the eligible voters. That piece was solved by the Supreme Court years ago. The phrase majority of the crafter class cannot be interpreted to mean a majority of voters. The Supreme Court, by logic, and also because the Supreme...
You just agreed it didn't decide that question.
That question, with all respect, was in black and white. The Supreme Court says that a majority of the crafter class means a majority of the eligible voters.
So your position is that Virginia Railway controls the result of this case?
Absolutely not. Your Honor, the point of the matter is the court was doing two things. First, it made the observation that two-fourths, by saying majority of the crafter class, was not saying majority of the voters, it was saying majority of the eligible voters. That all that the Supreme Court then had in front of it was what came up to it from the lower courts, which is once you know that a majority of the crafter class is determined.
Determine means vote, right? When it says right to determine, that means vote.
That means an active, it doesn't have to be vote, Your Honor, because the Railway Labor Act doesn't even require an election. The board doesn't have to conduct an election. What it means is as we've argued, and I don't think the board has disagreed in its brief.
If I'm a member of the class, and the sentence before that says that as a member of the class, I have a right to participate in organizing. If I decide not to vote, Is that one way of exercising my right to determine?
The majority.
It's not clear, is it? You just can't tell from the statute what that means.
Well, Your Honor, as I've said, and I know I keep trying to get this out. The clarity at least has to be recognized that this issue was addressed and has been addressed on 6 or 8 occasions by the NMB, starting from the moment the statute was enacted, to say that at the time of its enactment, people understood. The first chairman of the NMB understood. The subsequent boards understood that determination by the majority of the crafter class meant a determination to select a representative by the majority of the eligible voters. The only issue that people litigated about in those days was what happens once you get there and a majority has so determined, but the vote is split between two unions. And to avoid undermining the majority determination, the Supreme Court addressed the issue of allowing the concept of assent by the minority. If you flip it the other way, as this current rule does, it undermines and does not support the right of the majority.
Let me ask you, if the statute said, it seems to me that they chose majority carefully, they could have said, every member of the class or craft shall have a right to determine, just like I have the individual right to vote. They didn't do that. They said the majority, which is a collective body, just like you have to have Judge Griffith to exercise an individual right, you've got to have the body of a majority, half plus one, to exercise this right.
Yes, and they said a majority, and then they didn't say a majority of those who vote. They said a majority of the crafter class. And the Supreme Court then went on to say that means a majority of the eligible voters.
Mr. Siegel, I want to go back to my... I want to ask my quorum question a different way. This same statute that we're talking about provides, with respect to board votes, it says two of the members in office shall constitute a quorum. In other words, the statute itself says that for the board to vote on anything, there have to be, it can't just be a majority, it's got to be two members. Now, so if that's essentially what you're saying about the union, and Congress, since Congress knows so clearly how to impose a quorum requirement, and it didn't in this section, doesn't that suggest that it's ambiguous? Congress could have said what you want. It could have said it must be a majority. It must be a majority that for an election to be legal, there must be a majority of the members of the class voting. That's what it said with respect to the board itself. So it knows how to do that. It didn't do it here.
Well, Your Honor, if I could say this, if the statute were to be as the NMB is now interpreting, it would have said a majority of the eligible voters. It wouldn't have said a majority of the crafter class.
It's ambiguous.
Well,
you just made the point.
No, Your Honor. Right. Again, if I can just.
I mean, at least that's why there's an argument that
right.
It's ambiguous.
I'd like to close the point of this. I don't think, fairly read, the government's brief makes the argument anymore that the phrase majority of the crafter class is ambiguous. I think that there is, fairly read, an agreement that means a majority of the eligible voters. The only argument they've made, and by the way, I think they pivoted from what they said in their final rule, and they pivoted from what Judge Friedman said. They do not any longer say that phrase standing alone is ambiguous because they cannot, because there is a specific statement in Virginia Railway that says it means eligible voters. So what they do now is they say, differently than what they said in the final rule, they say, well, it says majority of the crafter class, but it's silent as to how we define whether the majority has determined to be representative, and we have wide open discretion. And our answer to that is you have a lot of discretion. That's what the courts have said, but you do not have discretion to completely ignore the creation of the right in the majority to make the determination and give that right to the minority. That's what they've done for the first time in this rule. That has not been anything that has ever been permitted by any decision today, and the only court that ever looked at it directly said it was a violation of the statute.
So wouldn't that make it not only unreasonable, but impermissible?
It's impermissible. It's impermissible under the Railway Labor Act, and it is unreasonable. It is an unreasonable under Chevron 2, most certainly, to say that we are going to divine what the determination of the majority is by allowing the minority to have the right to control the vote. That is unreasonable. The board has said the board has said that there's an accuracy goal here to justify under Chevron. But when you step back, you are trying to determine whether the majority has made a determination, and it cannot be so that you look to the vote of the minority for that purpose.
All right. Thank you.
I think
we'll give you a few minutes of reply.
All right, thank you very much.
May it please the court, I'm John Capel with the Appellate Staff, Civil Division, U.S. Department of Justice, and I'm representing the Appellee National Mediation Board in this case. First of all, as Judge Friedman recognized in his very thorough and well-reasoned opinion, what the court has before it really is a routine Chevron 2, APA Chevron 2 case in which the statutory language is ambiguous, and the agency has issued a permissible interpretation of the statute and explained its reasons and demonstrated that it's not arbitrary and capricious.
Well, that would all work fine unless the statute's plain and clear, which is what the appellant argues.
That's correct, Your Honor, but we would respect...
Who owns the right under the statute?
The right is owned by the employees as a whole.
The statute says
the majority of any craft or class of employees shall have the right to determine.
So the right is owned by a majority of the craft or class.
Well, yes, Your Honor, but that
the majority is 50 plus, or half plus one.
That is true, Your Honor, but again, the majority, that doesn't answer the question of how the majority exercises its right. As long as the Supreme Court established in Virginia Railways through citing the cases such as the Cass County case and the Carroll County case, that there's no general requirement in our democratic system of compulsory voting, one should not impute positions to people who do not vote as a general matter. Now, the board's rule was contrary to, which was not statutorily compelled, was contrary to that. But again, it was not rooted in any way in the notion that the majority could only exercise its right in the fashion that was provided for by the old rule. And again, the old rule, of course, didn't require majority of the eligible voters. It required majority of the entire crafter class.
That went against Virginia Railway.
It was not. It didn't go against it. It was an exercise of discretion, Your Honor.
How does it be different? The majority of the class versus the majority of the eligible voters in the class. How's that different?
The majority of the class. It really isn't different, Your Honor.
I didn't think it was.
Excuse me?
I didn't think it was, but you made that distinction. I just didn't understand that.
Well, I didn't mean to make that distinction. Under the statute, the entire crafter class has the right to vote, and the majority determines the outcome. But again, that leaves discretion in the NMB to determine how what constitutes a majority, how that majority is to be determined.
Mr. Siegel provided an explanation for the language of silence in Virginia Railway that I referred to before, where Virginia Railway says they're silent as to the manner. He provided an explanation that suggests that what they were describing was silent as to how to choose between when you have a situation where you have at least two unions present in the vote, if I understood his point. What is your response to that?
Well, again, that's...
And in fact, it's not. They're not saying they're silent as to the manner of exercising the right of determination. Only in that particular setting is there no rule that's provided.
Well, that the silence is not really that. That's not the crucial point, and that's not what Virginian Railways was about.
Perhaps I think it's a very crucial point. To your argument that there's some ambiguity here. If, in fact, the Supreme Court has told us that the statute is silent as to the manner in which the right is exercised, I think it's very crucial. That's why I asked the question to him, and I'm asking it to you now. Well, he has given me an explanation as to what the court meant when referred to silence there. What's your explanation for what they meant?
Well, again... Perhaps we should turn to the specific language of Virginia Railways on this point. And
the language I was quoting is silent. The statute is silent. The statute is, quote, silent as to the manner in which the right shall be exercised, close quote.
And where, which...
I'm reading that from my notes. I'm sorry, I don't have...
Oh, okay.
It's right after head notes 23 and 24.
Thank you.
The second paragraph.
Right, I'm looking.
It is to be noted that the words confer the right of determination upon a majority of those eligible to vote, but is silent as to the manner.
Are we on page 560 or 561?
Westlaw.
It is to be noted, right, I see it now, Your Honor. And in our view, the crucial explanation follows that sentence. It goes on to say, election laws providing for approval of a proposal by a specified majority of an electorate have been generally construed as requiring only the consent of the specified majority of those participating in the election. There's no quorum requirement in the statute, as Judge Tatel recognized. What the statute simply, it gives the majority the right to determine, but again, that's entirely...
What does that mean, then? If it doesn't mean that the majority has to vote to have an election that means something, what does it mean?
Your Honor, there are different ways the board can determine how the sentiment of the majority. One way is the old rule. Another way is the traditional rule that we have in elections in this country, in political elections.
Acquiescence in the majority.
That's correct, Your Honor, and that's really the crux of the Virginia Railways holding, and that is why it's clear that the board has discretion.
Call that a holding? That's not the holding of Virginia Railway. I mean, this is at best dicta in Virginia Railway. I mean, the holding is based on the facts before it, and has been ably pointed out. This was not a case in which you had less than a majority participating.
That's true, but there was no. But it can equally be said that the sentence that the plaintiffs rely on is a dictum that if, in addition to participation by a majority of a craft, a vote of the majority of those is necessary, that's also a dictum because that wasn't the situation before the Supreme Court in Virginia Railways, and subsequent case law from this court and from other circuits. Have made it clear that a majority is not, or participation by a majority or a quorum requirement is not statutorily compelled either. And that's also consistent with the National Labor Relations Act practice regarding elections, and that's based on very similar statutory language. And indeed, in an act.
Similar statutory language, but a very different circumstance, right? You're talking about national elections versus local elections, right? There's a very good reason to treat them differently.
Well, Your Honor, again, that in our respectfully, that's a distinction without a difference.
The court has cautioned us always to be careful about taking the principles of the NLRA beyond the NLRA.
Right? Well, that's correct, Your Honor. But again, for this purpose, there's no basis for distinguishing between the statutes because they have very similar histories, and they were enacted roughly contemporaneously. And it's quite clear that that Congress was aware of both schemes at the same time.
You have a separate scheme for railways, suggests that there must be some difference there, right?
Yes, Your Honor, there certainly is different. The Railway Labor Act preceded the NLRA. The NLRA, in effect, was a much broader generalized labor statute that applied to private sector labor, collective bargaining and labor activities across the board. But for purposes of the elections, there's no basis for distinguishing between the two. It's also clear that there was no majority requirement no quorum requirement under the Transportation Act of 1920 and under the Principle 15 under that act, which again was the basis for the Railway Labor Act amendments of 1934, which are at issue here. There, the old Railroad Labor Board made it clear that referred only to a majority of those voting, and not to any. There was no greater requirement, and
you can't see why.
Is your hand still on 560 of Virginia Railway?
Yes, Your Honor.
A little further, 561. You brought up the Railroad Labor Board, the court says it's significant of the congressional intent that the language of 2-4 was taken from a rule announced by the U.S. Railroad Labor Board. And then it says in that paragraph, citing a case, prior to the adoption of the Railway Labor Act, this rule was interpreted by the board, where it appeared that a majority of the craft participated in the election. The board ruled that a majority of the votes cast was significant to was sufficient to designate a representative. So even there, the majority participated. I mean, the Supreme Court, I don't see how you could ignore the facts that were before the Supreme Court. And the facts were that the blacksmith's election had a majority participating, but no majority voting for one of the two unions.
Well, Your Honor, if the district court case where the certification was held invalid had been appealed up to the Supreme Court, and that had been before the Supreme Court in Virginia and Railways, then certainly that would have been decided. But it doesn't follow from the fact that it wasn't that the Supreme Court ruled that there was a quorum requirement here.
Are you saying this, that if the Supreme Court said in Virginia Railway, well, if you have a majority participating, you don't have a majority, you don't need a majority to vote yes. But we're not, but if you don't have a majority participating, then anything goes? They can't have.
They simply didn't address this question, Your Honor.
How could they address it otherwise than with this condition precedent of the majority participating?
Because they were addressing it they were focusing on the question of whether there was a requirement that there be a majority of the entire corruptor class, which was the argument that was before them, and they rejected that.
Once you have the majority participating, the issue before the court was whether you have to have a majority of the class also voting for a particular union? And they said no.
Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree with that characterization that first part, that predicate was essential to the Virginian Railways holding.
That's the fact before them. You had 46 men in the blacksmith's craft. You had 30 people voting. 22 voted for the association, 8 voted for the company union. I may have to, the Federation had 22. Okay, it didn't have a majority of the 46. And the court said, you don't need that. You have a majority of those who voted, that is 22 of 30. If we did it another way and let the 16 who didn't vote be counted in the majority of the union that won, there would be no successful union. And that's what they were worried about. And that's what they decided.
Well, Your Honor, again, it's clear from the history of this statute that there have been situations where the board has not required a quorum. It has simply required a majority of those voting. For instance, in the Laker context, and also where there's agreement between the parties to the election. There's a long history that the board exercised its discretion under the old rule to essentially give the non-voters veto power, but that was not statutorily compelled.
I want to press you a little bit on your comparison between this act and the actions of the National Labor Relations Board. Couldn't it be that Congress decided for railway workers that they were going to make it a higher threshold before a union would be formed? And therefore require the majority participation. The right belongs to the majority.
But, Your Honor, there's no support for that in the legislative history. In fact, the Senate report specifically refers to a majority of those voting.
I think that was a single comment by an individual senator. Am I not mistaken on that?
I think it was a statement in a report, in the Senate report. I don't think it came from a single senator. I think that was the statement of the committee. That is certainly that.
Would you just go back and once more say your response to Judge Henderson's question about Virginia Railway? I didn't quite understand your answer to her.
Well, Your Honor, Virginia Railway was not premised on the notion that the holding of Virginia Railway was not premised on the notion that there that a majority of the eligible voters had participated. That formed the factual background of the case, but that was not essential to the holding in the case, which is what makes it a dictum.
They didn't hold it because that wasn't the issue before them. The issue was whether, in addition, where you have a majority participating, whether you need a majority to vote for a specific union. I mean, they weren't asked to hold. Do you have to have a majority participating? That's what the facts were.
Yes, Your Honor, but again, that's sort of the precisely because it wasn't the issue before then, they didn't actually have to resolve this question. I also point out that this whole notion of a minority rule here is really a red herring, because under the new rule, we've had a majority. There have been 31 elections, and in all but one of them, one you had far more than a majority voting, and the one in which they didn't, there were only two voters and one in the unit and one voted. So that was this notion. This is really a myth, the notion that this is a minority rule, or that this somehow creates a minority union system. It's totally speculative. It's not supported by the history of the Railway Labor Act, either before the new rule or since the new rule has been enacted.
Can you explain something to me just factually, if there's an election and the union wins, does the board require periodic elections, or is that it? Is that union then the representative until there's a decertification election?
Yes, Your Honor, unless and until there is a decertification election. That's correct.
Does it have the three-year presumption?
Excuse me?
Does it have the three-year presumption
LRB?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor. Well,
can I change the subject for a minute?
Sure.
Okay. So let me use that as a segue to a different part of the ATA's argument. And I wasn't totally sure I understood your response to their argument about the fact that the standards for calling for a representation election and a decertification vote are now different. They're not different, but that this produces this upsets that parallelism. And their point is that you need 50% to have a decertification election, but under the board's new rule, with respect to representation elections, you can have less than 50% vote for the union. Right? So what I didn't understand your, and their argument to that is that's just not fair.
Well, Your Honor, the board rejected the notion that initial representational elections and decertifications were intertwined, and it doesn't agree that parallelism is required.
I know it doesn't, but why? That was the question. I didn't.
For one thing, because in the
decertification, I knew what its view was. I knew it didn't think that they need to be parallel. I was asking you to explain to me your defense of their, what is their reason, and what's your view about that?
Well, in the decertification context, the stability, the element of stability really does come into play with much greater force, because there you're talking, if you encourage decertification, the decertification process, you will encourage union raiding and thereby destabilize labor relations in that fashion. That's why there's always been a 50% plus one requirement once there is a certified representative. But the showing of interest requirement. Now, the showing of interest requirement for an initial representation has always been 35%. So they're confusing two different things. They're confusing election.
It has always been. I don't think they're confusing it at all. You're right. There's no change in those two. But their point is that as a result of the new rule, which allows less than 50% of the members to select a, in other words, you could have 35% who showed interest for an election where there's no union could pick a union, and the next day it would require 50% to decertify the union, and that's it seems to me that's their argument. And your answer to that is, I gather, what you just said, right? That stability is important at the decertification process. Is that your answer?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And union rating and all that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that is the crux of the distinction mm-hmm. between the initial election, that representation election, and decertification election. But again, there's nothing in the language of the statute itself that unambiguously establishes a requirement that a majority of the eligible voters participate. There is no quorum requirement in this statute. And for instance, in the NLRA in section 8A32 on the union shop, Congress established a quorum requirement, so it knows how to do this. But it has not done this here. So the notion that this is sort of the plain intent of Congress here is established simply does not withstand scrutiny.
Well, if you just a while ago said, when I asked you who owned the right, and you said a majority of the class or craft, how is that different from a quorum?
Well, again,
you know, who owns it? A majority, a quorum, whatever you want to call it, is 50 plus one owns that right.
Again, Your Honor, that doesn't address how that majority is to be determined, and how, and that is what the board is.
Entity has to participate in some way.
It can do that by acquiescence as well, Your Honor. That's really the teaching of Virginian Railways, and that's why the Supreme Court cited the Cass County and Carroll County in those cases. That's the way democratic elections generally work in this country in the political process, and there's no reason, and in the NLRA process.
There are plenty of reasons not to import that into the labor. One is this statute, controls, and it's not the same statute that controls popular elections. Another reason is, if you go way back into the 1800s, in the cases that Virginian Railway cited for that, one of the reasons for the rule in popular elections is that you look at the majority of those people who vote, who actually voted, is the inconvenience and even the inability of them to figure out how big the class was. In other words, how many eligible voters there were.
Well, but Your Honor, and certainly in modern times, that's not a problem, because you have registration requirements, and that, so you know the body of eligible voters. So here again, the crucial point is that the statute does not by its terms compel majority participation as a requirement of a valid election. Again, it leaves to the board the question of how to exercise its discretion with respect to these election requirements.
Your time is up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Siegel, why don't you take a couple of minutes?
You won't.
Okay, thank you for just allowing me a very short reply. First of all, I'd like to just return to Judge Tatel's question to me about 49 voting yes and 2 voting no, because I want to make sure that that we've communicated, or I've communicated adequately there. Under the board's old rule, if there were 100 people in the unit, you need to have a majority who actually affirmatively determined that there will be a representative. There was no vote. So if you had 49 for one union and 2 for another union out of a 100-person unit, then you would have a majority determination and the plurality union would be certified. But if you had only 49 actually making the determination for certification, there was no vote box on the ballot. So if 49 voted out of 100, then there would be no majority determination. So I want to make sure I just answered the question as directly as possible, Judge Tatel.
We went through it. You can use your 2 minutes in a better way than responding.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to clarify on the questions regarding decertification, just to make it clear that under the way the NMB administers the Railway Labor Act, there is actually no formal decertification procedure at all. It's even worse than what we were talking about a couple of moments ago with counsel for the government. This new rule allows certification of a union with less than a majority participating, and then the Railway Labor Act, as administered by the NMB, unlike the NLRA, has no direct decertification procedure at all. There is no 2-year, 3-year period. There is no check.
But you're not challenging that.
I'm not challenging that. I just wanted to.
Are you not making? Well, where does the 50% rule come from?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Where does the 50% showing of interest rule come from?
That comes from the board, Your Honor.
I thought you said it didn't have any procedures.
It has a straw man procedure. Okay. What I'm saying is the NLRB has a decertification petition that employees can file.
Yeah, I understand it's different from the NLRB's, but isn't it true that the procedure at this board is you have this, the decertification is through the straw man process, right?
You don't file to decertify. You actually find some entity that's going to be your straw man.
I understand, but the purpose of that is to see whether the union any longer represents the members. Correct.
Yeah. But the effect.
Did you argue in your brief that
yes.
that the 50% that now the difference between 35 and 50 is significant?
So, Chair, you had that absolutely right.
So, what about his response, though? And you see, his response is, and this is what I thought the board had said was, and this goes back to what you and I were talking about a little earlier, which is that the board has now said that in its judgment, and I realize you don't agree with this, but the board has now said that, look, stability comes from the negotiations, from the collective bargaining, from the mediation, not from the election. But when it comes to the decertification, or the straw man, as you call it, that because the stability of the system depends on the stability of the collective bargaining process, we want to make it more difficult to disrupt that by changing unions.
I understand.
That's their position.
That's their position. Their position also throughout the century, including as recently as 2008, yeah, was that majority-sponsored unions created necessary stability as well for the ability to make successful nationwide collective bargaining agreements that can be negotiated and can be ratified. That has been their position on stability for virtually 80 years, Your Honor.
I think that they've satisfied the Supreme Court's Fox decision in terms of explaining why that's different now or why they've reassessed it.
I think.
Then what do you think about their argument about the 50%?
Well, I think that it is arbitrary and capricious to set up a system right now where as a minority group of employees can participate to select a union. It can be 20%. It can be, I mean, the showing of interest is 35%, but then when you have the election, it can be.
It always has to be reciprocal. It always has to be the same.
It does.
Whatever level you have to create a union, you have to have the same level.
I don't think it's a black letter rule. I'm just saying that under the standard that.
Haven't times changed? I mean, can't they say circumstances have changed, that originally there was this problem with union companies, that's not quite as extant, so we'll respond to that?
Your Honor, the company union problem existed well over 50 years ago. They have issued a series of decisions in the last decade that have repeated the notion that the core purpose of the Railway Labor Act, stability in the collective bargaining relationship, is tied to majority selected unions. The problem they identify in their brief disappeared 50 years ago. They continued over that period to reemphasize the fact that the core reason we have the majority supported unions under the Railway Labor Act is because we have nationwide craftsman classes, we have a statute that makes it very difficult to strike, and we have a unique focus on avoiding disruption to operations. That's Section 1A, that's Section 2/1 of the Railway Labor Act. This is the core purpose of the Railway Labor Act. Section 2/4, properly read, is consistent with and part of that entire core purpose of the Railway Labor Act. That's why you have majority selected unions identified in 2/4. And the board has on occasion, all the way up until 2 years ago, said that there is an inherent stability that we gain from majority-selected unions and in connection with the collective bargaining process and in connection with avoiding disruptions and strikes, Your Honor. I do think it is arbitrary and capricious and unexplained to deviate from that value at this time with so little said. Thank you.